Some would think that maybe we learned some lessons after COVID that can prepare us for the next epidemic or pandemic. But Arthur Kaplan, MIT professor of bioethics at the New York University Grossman School of Medicine, argues in an April 2024 piece in Health Affairs that maybe we haven't learned our lessons. The piece is entitled How to Endure a Pandemic and Learn Almost Nothing. I'm delighted to welcome back to Health Cetera in the Catskills, Dr. Arthur Kaplan. Thank you so much, Arthur, for being with me today.
Thanks for having me, Diane.
So this piece in Health Affairs that you wrote is actually based on a book written by Donald McNeil called The Wisdom of Plagues. And I have to admit, I have not yet read that book, but you note that he argues that we have not learned from our experience with epidemics and pandemics, and you agree with him. Give us some examples of how we have not learned from this most recent pandemic.
Well, Diana, the major failure to learn is to figure out the fact that pandemics are almost always occupational diseases. They don't start as public health problems for big swaths of humanity. They start as focused problems for particular workers. In the case of COVID, meatpacking workers, people who are delivering packages, healthcare workers like nurses and doctors, EMTs, police. You remember the phrase essential workers? So that group would have been the first group to really bear the brunt of the disease. If you look today, avian flu is starting to circulate around in the US in dairy cows, but we see it in cats, alpaca, which are being raised commercially. Mice, many other species. And at least three farm workers have gotten the disease. So, first unlearned lesson, treat viral infections as occupational diseases, not just public health problems. Make sure the groups that are responsible for occupational safety have the authority and the ability to respond. Right now in the US, if I wanted to send Department of Agriculture inspectors to dairy farms in New York, I couldn't do it because they have no authority to go in there and test the animals. Well, that's absurd. We have to find out if something is breaking out that could jump from animals to us. Relatedly, a lot of these dairy farm workers are in different parts of the country here without papers. They don't want to talk to authorities. But we have to find ways to safely test them to see if we're getting an epidemic without them feeling that they're going to be deported or they can't honestly report symptoms. So sadly, OSHA, Department of Agriculture, groups like that do not coordinate with the CDC. That is a huge unlearned lesson.
That is, and it's quite concerning. There's some pieces being written about how we are setting ourselves up for another epidemic, if not a pandemic, with the avian flu, because of exactly what you spoke about. We have not learned the lessons, and we seem to be actually more cautious than we were before COVID-19 pandemic about trying to use tried and true public health measures to stop the spread.
So another problem with COVID, we never had easily affordable, accurate, rapid testing. There were COVID tests that popped up, but it was later in the game. They weren't always so easily accessible. Places were running out, then people were hoarding them. You want to have cheap, available, accurate testing because that's the way you can keep people from needing to be quarantined or isolated or restricted. If you get tested for an infectious disease and you don't have it, and better still, if there's a vaccine for it, then unlike what some critics were worried about, loss of liberty, you get liberty. But we basically said we're going to push a vaccine solution to COVID. That was President Trump pushing vaccines all the time without testing. And that is another unlearned lesson. Cheap, available testing really lets people go about their business because they can test negative and go where they want. And especially if they then can vaccinate and protect themselves from others, you don't need all the school shutdowns. You don't need all the restaurants to close and so on.
Now, there's also the issue of supply chains. We were not prepared for COVID, even in terms of things like masks and respirators, where we had been actually, if I'm recollecting correctly, I want to say a decade earlier, we had the supplies in the national supply warehouse, if you will, but we decided we didn't need those. So here we are with not enough masks, not enough respirators. Are we doing any better on that from what you understand?
Nope. Sorry, but no. We are still reliant for a lot of our protective gear on China. China is still ornery toward us. Comes and it goes, depends. We've still got all kinds of problems with attacks on shipping in the Red Sea, attacks on shipping off the coast of Somalia. When you get these kinds of blockades and attacks, you can't ship the necessary chemical ingredients or even the supplies themselves. The bridge falling down in Baltimore didn't do us any good. That clogged up the main port in the east for months. So we're still relying on long distance shipping of protective gear or the components or even the elements that make up our drugs. And I think that's poor national security. You have to build the capacity to make a lot of this stuff here and not just rely on other countries to trade with you in a tough political and terrorist environment.
Now, McNeil, in your piece, you described McNeil as making some recommendations for how we should respond and get our act together here. And you don't seem to take issue with his recommendations, but rather with the underlying assumption that it's all we're where we are because of what you call the misinformation rationale. Talk to us about the misinformation rationale.
Well, if you're on social media platforms, there are plenty of people from all political ideologies complaining about misinformation. People putting up stuff that isn't true. Kind of depends on your political view as to what you think isn't true, but there's common agreement that a lot of stuff up there is just not accurate or not true. On one side, people complain that information put up there about vaccines and autism isn't right. On the other side, experts say, of course it's right. We've debunked the autism connection to vaccines years and years ago. And it goes on and on with those kinds of disputes. My friend McNeil thinks if you got rid of that misinformation, then we'd have a better response to the pandemic. And it's hard to argue that if we had more accurate information, it wouldn't be better. But I don't think that's getting at the real problem. The real problem is ethics, not facts. People say, I want my liberty. You can't tell me what to do. I'm not going to follow mandates to mask or vaccinate. I'm not going to do anything that I don't want to do. That's not a good ethic in a pandemic because pandemics require a community response. You have to look out for people who can't vaccinate. Elderly, newborn babies, people with cancer, they can't do anything except rely on you to protect them. And then it's a population that has to be protected against infection because all the vaccines, you know, none of them are 100% effective. So if you have a pocket of people who don't do it, say on Long Island, where we've seen phony vaccines prescribed for people and they weren't really vaccinated, you get outbreaks. We're seeing it today with measles. People often say to me, well, you want to get vaccinated, go ahead. What's the problem if I don't? The problem is if you don't and 10 of my neighbors don't, then pretty soon I've got the conditions for a breakout because the protection I get is only 90%. The best protection is if we all get vaccinated. So I have to rely on your concern for others. I have to hope that you'll be empathetic. I have to hope that you'll take a stance that my neighbor is important. I wish our churches would speak up more about this than they do. or have, but it isn't just getting the facts right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You also note that we still don't recognize a right to basic health care.
So again, if you have a situation, most people, most of the time, somebody's lacking health insurance or access to services, well, that may be bad for them, but it doesn't really impact you too much, most people think. But it does. If there's 10% of us roughly who still don't have insurance or can't really access a healthcare provider because we live in a place, rural New York, some inner city neighborhoods where there aren't any, then guess where they all go? To the ER. And they're there if you need the ER, if you're in a car accident or something happens. So all of a sudden, the ERs are overwhelmed by people who don't have health insurance just going there because they have a headache or their kid has a cough or whatever the minor issue may be. Delivering care to people in ERs is the most expensive, wasteful thing we could do. So let's get everybody insured, get primary care. If we don't have enough docs, then let's do it with nurses or physician aides. But we got to extend the safety net out. Otherwise, the ERs get overwhelmed. And there are a lot of people who don't get the basic message because they're not in the healthcare system to mask or vaccinate. You may remember when vaccines first came out and they were scarce and people were rushing around trying to get them, not avoiding them, but trying to get them. They were actually sent to zip codes that were poor to try and cover the uninsured, but all the rich people ran in there and took them.
Yeah. And your call for investing more in primary care is music to my ears, because in the Catskill region, we are a primary care desert. We have very little primary care. The other piece that you emphasize is that human life does not carry equal value in any government's public policy. Explain that.
This is sad, but again, even if you had all the facts right, if your government or some government in another country says, I don't care about prisoners, well, prisons are great incubators for infectious disease. Guess what? The guards go in there and correctional personnel and bring them home. So jails and prisons in New York State were breeders for sending out disease. You've got to care about those people because they could impact you, and they also should have a right in and of themselves not to die of diseases. Vulnerable elderly people, demented people, nursing homes died in droves in New York. No one seemed to care. Wrote them off. There were even people who wrote articles saying, well, they're old. Let them go. That's the response. Disabled adults in developmental homes died in droves. No attention to them. Nobody seemed to care. So my point is there are big populations of people that got no attention during COVID that aren't getting any attention now, but they get harmed. The elderly in nursing homes is one of the great moral scandals of our time, that they died in such big numbers, in my view. And they can threaten the rest of us because the diseases go out through the workers who interact with these people. So unless we build up protection for the dependent elderly, we're still going to have troubles in pandemics.
So at the end of your piece, I was left questioning, though, how do we address this? I've been quite concerned. I was quite concerned at the time about the extent to which people in my community, people who I knew, would say, well, I'm not going to get vaccinated, or I'm not going to wear a mask. And it was all about them. And I would say, what about your friends, your family, your neighbors, and what you may be exposing them to? And still today, I just heard a few days ago about COVID is rearing its head again, of course.
Yeah.
And somebody who knew that they had COVID went to a large concert and likely spread it to a number of people. How do we tackle this? These are ethical dilemmas, but how do you help people understand that while there are individual rights, the idea of public good, of community good, the greater good, is something worth embracing, particularly in this country?
Well, first, we need more messages from churches, synagogues, mosques. Religion should be speaking up. They're the place that cares about social justice. tells us to do what Jesus would have done, which is to care about the poor and the prisoner and the prostitute and the vulnerable. And so I think that messaging should be coming across much more loud and clear. Second, I think it's very important to not sit quiet when billionaires and egomaniacal gazillionaires come around and say, well, this is what I'm going to do, and I don't care about you. I'm going to Mars, or I'm freezing my head, and I'll be around forever because I'm really important. Those are not good role models. That selfishness extolled to the nth degree, and that isn't what complicated society, either in the U.S. or the world, is going to best be served by. So I think the media has a role in not extolling selfish greed the way that is happening now. And then there's a hammer. We might use the law more aggressively. You say, I'm not going to vaccinate. You go to the school or go to the hospital and the newborn gets sick or maybe even dies. I know it's hard to say, but in America, that should be a lawsuit. You should be saying, you didn't do what you needed to do to protect me or my newborn grandchild or whatever, and you have to pay the price. Yes, you may do what you want, but it isn't without liability and consequences.
And in fact, I've been waiting for people to start protesting having to wear seatbelts, for example.
Oh, they're coming.
They're coming.
There's protest reigniting about fluoride. Yeah.
I mean, we really are, we want to do what we want to do without regard to how our behaviors may affect others. So,
well, it's one thing to argue for, you know, self-advantage is a positive force in the economy. It's another thing to argue that acting like a 9-year-old and saying, I'm going to do what I want to do is an acceptable ethic. I doubt that very much. You wouldn't put up with that in your kids anyway.
Yes, yes. Well, any last words for our listeners about how we work ourselves through this dilemma, because there will be another epidemic or pandemic. And it's sort of startling to see how woefully prepared we are and that we have not learned the lessons from COVID.
Well, I would say two things. One, engage the fight locally. Bring it up at your church or synagogue or high school parent teachers association or Kiwanis or Rotary. What are we going to do with the next one and why? So that's a local issue. It isn't just what Tony Fauci says at the NIH or something. It's right down to, you know, Socrates and let's have the fight in Monroe and fight it out. Let's engage that now while we have a few minutes. The other is I would ask that local officials start to be held accountable for what they would do at the next pandemic as part of political discourse. I don't see that too much. Mm. Nobody wants to talk about COVID or anything anymore, tired of it and kind of have had it. But that's not a good way to prep for the next problem.
Yeah, well, I think we're a bit flawed here, Arthur Kaplan. and maybe we'll make our way through this. I'm not quite sure we will. But I very much appreciated your piece in Health Affairs and your having the conversation with us today. I've been talking with Dr. Arthur Kaplan, the Mitty Professor of Bioethics at the New York University Grossman School of Medicine. Thank you so much for coming
Thank
back
you.
On Health Better in the Catskills today, Arthur. Thank you.